I've been looking forward to this segment. It was so much fun when we had the guy on previously, and it's going to be a lot of fun again here tonight because he's always covering the best and most intriguing stuff out there. I said before we went to break, I described him as a sports and sports media columnist to the world. I can only be speaking of Neil Best of Newsday. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the FDH Lounge, Neil Best. Good to have you back on the show, sir. How are you tonight?
Okay, can you hear me okay? Because you're a little faint. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay.
I had been told that previously. Hopefully we'll come across okay. And
My fantasy draft is Sunday night. Now I'm bummed that I missed this previous segment.
Neil, thank you for putting this out there. The archives can be found on fantasydrafthelp.com. And we have the archives linked actually also tonight on the FDHLounge.com. So, yeah, and I think we have your email address. We'll get you the archives, sir. You're going to want to check this out. Those guys were great. It was I just had to kind of sit here and just listen to them. They did a great job. Again, as I said, you cover, you know, the biggest, the most compelling stories. You're always in the middle of that. We've been linking now to your Watchdog blog on our Ultimate Links page that we have for the FDH Lounge. Let's start with item number one on here, the most recent one, headline, Prince Fielder Seeks Tour of Dodgers Clubhouse is Denied. That was something interesting went down. Speaking of fantasy, I got Prince Fielder on one of my fantasy teams, and Neil, unfortunately, he's probably going to get a vacation one of these weeks.
Yeah, that was quite a piece of video. It was funny. I had never been to Dodger Stadium in my life, so when my family was on vacation there in L.A. a few weeks ago, the Dodgers were out of town, so we took a tour of the stadium since we couldn't go to a game. And I, 2 weeks ago, I was standing right outside that same door that Prince Fielder was trying to get in. Yeah, that was strange, but it was a pretty good piece of video.
Yeah, that's very interesting. We've got ESPN News on in studio, and it's been on a constant loop here tonight. Again, for something where no punches were thrown, the video sure seems to keep getting shown an awful lot here. I promise I'm not just going to go down in order of the stories that you've got on the site here, but I wanted to hit the next one anyways, just because it's very interesting. I've heard it talked about on other radio stations today. It got addressed on Deadspin. It's clearly a hot-button topic out there. ESPN, now, the way that they are reacting to Facebook and Twitter and everything like that, in other words, basically taking away the independent platforms for any of their talent and essentially saying that you are representing ESPN 24/7 wherever you're at. So if you're doing this on your own medium, you're sort of going into business for yourself, and that's in violation of your contract. It's a very interesting interpretation. Not surprisingly, the new media world is not looking very kindly on this latest edict from the worldwide leader.
Yeah, I they are not, and I'm definitely in the minority on this, because for the most part I'm sympathetic to ESPN's policy on this. In fact, a month or two ago I asked my own editors, how do we feel about the fact that we got our beat writers going on Twitter and essentially breaking stories? Now, not big stories, and for the most part, look, if people are using Twitter to link to what they're doing on their employer's site, if a Newsday writer is saying, hey, check out my blog post, or if an ESPN guy is saying, hey, look at what I wrote on ESPN.com, then obviously, to me, that's no problem. But, we got guys who, I guess, whether it's to build their own brand or whether it's to get stuff out there that there's no place for on their own company's site, the fact of the matter is they still are providing content essentially outside of the bounds of their own organization. So, I know it's an extremely complicated topic, and there are certain things that are harmless about it, but for the most part, I agreed with that memo from ESPN.
Well, I think, again, there is something to be said for that, and I'm a pretty big new media sympathizer myself, but yeah, the fact that they represent ESPN, people will associate ESPN with anything that they do. So it is kind of fair for, I think, the other side of the ledger to come in with that on what do they owe to their employer. I think there is a point to be made there. But as far as one of the employees of ESPN, I like to address this also here too, as it's sort of an intermingled topic to where we were just at. Bill Simmons replying to your assertion about Twitter being a fad. I'd like to explore that with you a little bit here, in the sense that again, I don't have a personal Twitter account, and I'm kind of dubious of a lot of the people who do and who like to post about that they put jelly on their toast this morning and stuff. You know, we've got an FDH Lounge account where, you know, we'll try to promote stuff on the site. We'll maybe try to put up, you know, some little smart alecky type things here just to kind of promote the general FDH Lounge attitude and everything. So we use it sort of as a marketing branding tool for this brand that we're trying to put together. I do think it's got legs in that sense, in the sense of people using it more or less as a text messaging service, you know, gone wild, maybe
right.
Not. But do you not believe that in a marketing promotional sense that this thing's going to be around and with us for quite a long time?
Well, I mean, yeah, see, if that's all it's going to be, and I agree with you, that's what it's mostly becoming, at least the people that I follow or the companies that I follow, you're right, that's what it's become, a marketing vehicle to link to stuff or to say, hey, check out this or... I don't know what, you know, 20-year-olds are using it for, but most of my friends or professional acquaintances use it for marketing. And I don't know how, you know, to me, that's going to get old eventually. I mean, you know, this really, Twitter is a cool toy. There's no doubt about that. However, you know, why is it that different from someone updating their blog all the time? I mean, if Paula Abdul wants to announce she's leaving American Idol, she could do that on a blog as opposed to on her Twitter. I mean, I know there's certain, you know, Twitter is so immediate and so short and punchy that it has its advantages. And I don't think it's going to disappear. I just think we're in the middle of the peak of this Twitter mania. But, you know, I mean, MySpace was mania a few years ago, and Facebook was about 6 months ago. And, you know, I mean, maybe fad is too strong of a word, but I don't think that this level of excitement over it is going to be sustained over a long period of time. It's fast. I mean, you know, like I've written on the blog, all this stuff is fascinating, particularly for a 48-year-old to see how this stuff's evolving. And other than the effect on my job security of the internet, I think the whole thing is—it's just an amazing time to be living through in communications. And this whole Twitter thing this week is just another example of it.
Actually, you just inspired a follow-up question that maybe goes full circle to what ESPN's trying to do here. Because, again, we're seeing everything evolve here. I mean, you know, even Facebook, which is now putting Twitter-like adaptations on there as far as how they've
right.
changed their updates and everything like that. So, you know, you try to nail something down right now at a certain point in time. It's like trying to nail down Jell-O because 3 months from now something may look different. Is it possible that we're going to look back on what ESPN's trying to do as an evolution in where Twitter's going? Because ESPN, the read that I'm getting here with trying to take these type of features and put them on their site, they seem to be doing like a gimme type of move to try to, I don't want to say usurp because they may have certain rights to do this, but essentially take that technology, take that tendency for eyeballs to follow this kind of stuff, whether it be a Rick Bucher post or whatever, and get it on their site. Are we going to see a lot of media big boys maybe starting to follow suit on this as far as trying to take the attention that is being steered towards Twitter and try to steer it back to their own sites in similar ways?
Before I get to that, yeah, I mean, it sounds like what they're trying to do is simply make it so that if someone sends something out on a Twitter feed, it's essentially simultaneously going to appear on an ESPN platform. So they can try to, yeah, take it, you know, I guess in a way, yeah, take advantage of the technology and not have somebody kind of going off on their own. You know, and it's not only a matter of the content. As they indicate in that memo, they don't want, if you're an ESPN talent and you go on Twitter, if you're, just to take a name, let's say Bill Simmons, I mean, if you go on Twitter and say just saying some inappropriate humor or curse words, whatever it might be, well, yeah, I mean, it's fair for ESPN to say, you know, you're a public figure who is associated with ESPN, which pays your salary, so we have a right to, you know, be concerned about your image or how you're representing yourself. But, you know, to take it another step further, it's all part of the media trying to figure out how to, you know, retain control financially and otherwise over its stuff. I mean, it goes to the issue of, Is Newsday going to go to a pay system for access to its website? Well, the answer is yes. You know, Cablevision has made that decision. We're taking that dive in the fall, and it's going to be frustrating because it's going to drastically diminish my profile, at least nationally, I don't know about locally, and that's going to be depressing, but I'm completely in favor of it simply because there's no alternative. Now that we've learned that the advertising is not going to sustain the Internet, part of our business, I don't understand what other choice we have. So that's kind of an offshoot of what we're talking about. But all these companies are trying to figure out how to live in this new environment and, more importantly, how to make money in this new environment. So it's, like I said, it's all very interesting other than the effects on my job security.
Well, sites have already had the, Twitter modules for a while now. We've got it on our FDH Lounge blog where when we update Twitter, it does maybe ESPN doesn't know that that's already there to an extent. And I sympathize with you sympathizing with your employer because it's really going to hurt not to be able to see your stuff as much for a lot of the people who aren't going to see it as much. But, yeah, you got to continue to get paid at the end of the day, Neil. You're not doing this for free. So if that's what they deem necessary to continue to pay you, I would guess that you're in sympathy with that. I didn't want to make everything here tonight about ESPN, but it's the dog days of summer, the silly season, whatever you want to call it. They seem disproportionately caught up in the dog days of summer, whether it be them trying to get themselves out there with contrived events or sometimes things just happening vis-a-vis this Aaron Andrews situation here. So, talk about that. I know that's another one. You're on all of these stories here. You've been covering all of them here. What's happened with her and just the way that again, to a certain extent, again, ESPN over the time, at least in ways subtle, has exploited the allure of Aaron Andrews. And I don't know that she necessarily has very much. I know that ESPN has, at least in subtle ways. And now that just seems to have blown up on everybody because, as inevitably happens, people always take things too far. Somebody took this too far, and boom, the Internet's got a new viral video.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of the bloggers whose first reaction was to kind of feel... look, obviously, none of us are directly complicit in this other than the guy who did it. However, I did feel like some bloggers did indirectly complicit in this because I participated in building this cult of Aaron up. And, somebody took it too far. Now, the debate was interesting about whether, Christine Brennan in particular kind of walked the dangerous line by almost making it sound like Aaron had asked for it, in that she's been extremely cooperative about this whole, blogger fascination with her, is extremely accessible. And one could argue that by doing that, she brought some of this on herself. But of course, that argument would have been a lot better to make before this incident happened. Once this happened, you're really walking a dangerous path there, again, essentially saying she asked for it, which I do not think is fair. She's just trying to, again, she's been a very good sport about this whole thing and has really come across as a regular person and a person who does a good job. But the fact that she's an ESPN person made it more likely to make her a target because, as you kind of were hinting at, ESPN is just so enormous and so ubiquitous that everything they do becomes a focus of attention. In the case of Aaron, in an unfortunate way, and then, of course, simultaneously, they had that thing where they did not report this charge against Ben Roethlisberger because they said they don't report on civil suits, even though they've done it in other situations.
Right.
And again, because they're ESPN, if it's another media organization making that decision, nobody cares or nobody notices. But because they're so big and so powerful in a way that no entity that covers non-sports news is, they have to accept the fact that people are going to question everything they do. That's the part of being as big as they are.
And Christine Brennan, again, interestingly enough, who you mentioned, she has been part of the sports media culture on there, whether it be shows like Sports Reporters. I think that's been her primary outlet on there when she's made appearances. Just a matter of personal opinion on my part, I'm somebody who has found her attitudinal stuff as far as pushing issues to be a little bit shrewish, shall we say, over time. So I don't think she did herself any favors for the people who see her that way. Boy, she really came across looking like the bitter older woman with what she had to say about Aaron Andrews.
In her defense, she's certainly one of the pioneers of women in sports journalism and deserves some respect for that. However, the timing was horrendous. If she had said the exact same thing a week earlier before this happened, it would have been, kind of an interesting point and something worth talking about and no big deal. But the timing was just horrible because I think, Aaron is kind of universally viewed in this as an innocent victim. And, and that's not what you want to accuse her of. But you know, I mean, Christine did back off on that a little and try to clarify. But you know, I just felt bad. I mean, look, well, part of the reason I haven't posted pictures of scantily clad women since then is we changed our picture policies, and that's a whole other story. But even if that had not happened, I mean, it really did make me, again, I know I'm not directly complicit in this occurring, but it did make me rethink this whole thing that I do, which many bloggers do, which is put up pictures of attractive women simply for the sake of having them up there. And It's definitely made me think twice ever since that Erin thing happened.
Now, Neil, periodic self-examination like that is a sign of strength. That's what you need to do. I stand by what you're doing. I agree with it completely there. It's good to be willing to take a look at you know, personal practices and see if you want to keep doing some things, not keep doing some other things. That's a great move on your part that you're willing to take a look at that. I got to ask you also here too, situated as you are in New York, you have been witness to what has been over the last couple of years one giant unfolding train wreck, but one that just seemed to have come to a particular head in the course of the last 2 weeks or so, the infamous Tony Bernazard press conference firing there with these New York Mets. They just have the ring of, you know, they the gang that can't shoot straight seems like the mother of all understatements for this crew.
Yeah, it's kind of sad because, you know, really the Mets, or as an organization, they are kind of more, you know, friendly and accessible than the big bad Yankees. But I mean, it's true. I've seen and heard and been at a lot of New York sports press conferences in the last 25 years, but that one is definitely in the top five for strangest. I mean, I was only watching on television, but when Omar Minaya went after the reporter, and SNY here in New York had a split screen with Adam Rubin reacting to the general manager calling him out, and that's one of the strangest things I have ever seen in New York media, and it was bizarre. And I think, you know, ultimately it's going to indirectly lead to Omar being gone. Of course, the Mets' record is a bigger issue than that, but yeah, I mean, nobody ever feels bad for the Yankees. That's almost inconceivable to feel bad for the Yankees, but I do sometimes feel bad for the Mets because they really are trying.
Yeah. Oh,
they are.
They
seem to be trying anyway.
They are. Omar Minaya is working in the right city because, man, if he doesn't look like a not ready for prime time player right now, I don't know who does.
Yeah, you know, discussing why Omar is so awful in press conferences is a very delicate thing because part of the reason he's not good is because English is not his first language. Now, in more relaxed settings, he's very comfortable and his English is perfectly fine. But I think in the stress of that situation, he has trouble expressing himself. Now, if you're a player and you don't speak English well, it's irrelevant. Your job is to hit the baseball, end of story. But you know, part of Omar's job, for better or worse, is being the face of the organization and communicating with media and fans. And he can't do it in these press conferences, and I think the Mets have realized that and are going to diminish that part of his role because he's failed at it repeatedly.
True, true. And that's, you know, again, criticizing him on the perceived, you know, Frito Bandito basis, totally unfair. Criticizing him for the moves he's made, completely in bounds, and there, he's pretty darn vulnerable.
Right. No, but, well, of course, the moves he's made are the key thing. That obviously, that's the biggest part of his job. I'm just saying that
sure. It
is fair game to criticize his inability to communicate publicly only
True. Because
that has been made part of his job by the organization, and he's just not done a good job of that. He had a bad press conference after Willie Randolph was fired. And, well, like I said, I mean, I think they've all kind of come to understand that that's not his strength, and they're not going to put him in that position anymore.
Sure. Oh, I get the distinction. I hear what you're saying, and
I
agree.
That's why I think as a player, I mean, yeah, of course you want players to be good with the media, and that's kind of a bonus. But I mean, ultimately, that's not in their job description. This guy is the, because the ownership is not that out there. I mean, Omar is essentially the face of the organization, the public face of communicating, and he just doesn't do a good job of that.
No.
Just doesn't. I mean, he's a smart guy. He's a friendly guy. But they put him in front of a live press conference, and it all falls apart.
Yeah, four words in over his head. Well,
yeah.
The other thing we'd like to ask you about here tonight, us being based out of Cleveland, you being based out of New York, it's obligatory to get an update on the pulse of New York City vis-a-vis LeBron James. Since we talked to you last, of course, the Cavs failed to win the title this year, but brought in Shaquille O'Neal for next year. We hear now that the salary cap looks to be coming down for the next season. The Players Association wasn't real happy about that announcement, but I'm sure the fans of New York weren't either. I mean, these sugar plum dreams that everybody's been having about LeBron and Chris Bosh and whoever playing in New York that have always seemed a little bit overheated to me. The reaction that I'm seeing from some of the New York sports fans online seems to be that reality may be catching up to them a little bit here as far as don't count your chickens. What are you sensing?
I think your perception is absolutely right, where six to 12 months ago, it was almost assumed LeBron was coming, and I think for various reasons, whether it's a salary cap or understanding the way, you know, the way the salary cap actually works for a guy staying with his own team, you know, for many reasons, there's no doubt that people in New York are understanding that's not a done deal by any means, and I don't know what plan B is, frankly, but you know, that's not going to stop people from obsessively following LeBron's status for the next year, of course. I mean, we, on our NBA column every Sunday, we have a little countdown to July 1st, 2010, a little picture of LeBron every week. So, yes, it's still obviously something people are going to monitor, but there's no question that people here have become realists about that compared to a year ago. And I think for good cause, because as you know, that's very far from a done deal that LeBron's coming to New York.
Well, Neil, you're going to chuckle when I tell you this. Maybe you've observed this yourself, this phenomenon. Maybe you haven't. But I've been on some message boards after the Shaquille O'Neal signing, and I had a chuckle as a lifelong Cavs fan to see this. When people want to talk about arrogant New York sports fans, their attitude towards the Cavaliers and Cav fans was almost like, how dare those usurpers think that they're going to hang on to LeBron past 2010 by hanging on, by signing Shaquille O'Neal? It was, they felt aggrieved, Neil. They felt as though somebody who was already in their uniform was being snatched from them. It was just the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
Well, I mean, of course, you know, even though I say I think a lot of fans have become more realistic, of course not all of them have, and you know, there are those, like you said, that are not going to accept the idea LeBron would even want to stay in Cleveland, even though, you know, as we all know, these days, I mean, Peyton Manning and LeBron are two of the best examples in this era where, you know, it really doesn't matter where you play because it's just so easy to be known globally in Cleveland or Indianapolis or wherever you are, or Green, you know, Brett Favre in Green Bay for that matter. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what the Knicks are going to do. They better do something because, you know, they really have, they've basically essentially admitted to their fans last year and this coming year that, yeah, we're going to try to win some games if we can, but that's not really what we're, that's not really the point of our existence. We're aiming for July 1st, 2010. And that a lot of people will have spent a lot of money on tickets between, you know, a year ago and a year from now. So if it's not LeBron, they're going to have to deliver something to get people excited next year.
Boy, there's going to be a lot of PO'd people if it's like Carlos Boozer and a lesser character from there,
yeah,
aren't there?
Right. I mean, that's definitely true. Of course, if they bring somebody in who's not that exciting but then ultimately makes them winners, then it won't matter. But, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. How are you enjoying Mangini so far? Because the New York media is so in love with Rex Ryan, it's unbelievable, because partly in contrast to Mangini.
It's funny. I mean, he's got this huge honeymoon in Cleveland, and oh, you know, at least he's not a softie like Romeo and everything. I mean,
right.
everybody's gulping the Kool-Aid, and you know, it's just really funny, Neil. You can see a lot of potential problems coming on the horizon, but people just don't want to hear it right now.
It's the usual thing, just like with the player. You know, it works the same way with fans and players. You have to you keep flipping the personality type. So in New York, everybody loves Ryan because he's not Mangini, and then if Ryan doesn't win, then they're going to want a no nonsense guy to come in and clean it up again. So it all depends. You know, it just keeps going back and forth. And but you know, I mean, the media in New York would be loving Rex Ryan regardless. But again, coming off the Mangini era, the media feels like it's you know, it's a holiday up there at Jets camp.
And
I think the players feel that way too. I think so.
Exactly. And what's the commonality? The other Ryan brother, dare I say, the lesser one, is the defensive coordinator now in Cleveland. So
right.
That's kind of funny too. But Neil, it's always a pleasure having you on the show here. Neil Best of Newsday, of course, the Watchdog blog is where you can find him online. He's got the column in Newsday. Neil, we always love to give everybody a chance to plug. Anything else in particular that people should know as far as looking for any of your content?
That's been a problem, actually, looking for my content. We had a redesign a couple weeks ago that people are having a little trouble adjusting to. So I'm happy that you've found the blog and you've linked to it and everything's all set there. And you know, I think the very interesting experiment for us coming up, like I said, in October, is going to be when we start charging non-Cablevision subscribers for that website. And I think that's going to be yet another very interesting experiment in the new media world, whether we can make that work.
Neil, our Ultimate Links page would not be the Ultimate Links page without that. And if we end up going from 1,608 to 1,607 once that gets kicked in, we'll be very sad indeed. But I tell you what, it's always a pleasure having you on. We look forward to it, and I'd love to do it again sometime soon.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Neil Best from Newsday, everybody. Sports columnist, sports media columnist to the world.